Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Sound Bites for this Saturday, September 9th, 1995. I'm Bob Smith, glad to have you with us today, and of course, you can be a part of it all just by dialing us up at 716-263-WXXI. That's 263-9994. Around the table with me, we have a panel of experts, an illustrious one this week, including Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Paula Chapman. And, of course, you, if you call in on the line with your questions, not to mention the return of the latest in computer news at the top of the broadcast. All that and more coming up on this edition of your Computer Users Group of the Air, Sound Bites. Over 2 weeks after Windows 95 hit the stores, reviews are mixed and customer service helplines reportedly are swamped across North America. Most complaints seem to focus on installation problems, according to helpline experts at Digital Equipment Corporation, which has contracted with Microsoft to field calls. One frustrated new user told the Wall Street Journal, quote, "I'm ready to throw the whole thing against the wall." Complaints are pouring in about the Microsoft network, too, with many users griping about how slow they believe it is and how little content is up and running compared to existing online services. The technical glitches are common in network startups, and Microsoft's marketing director says, for the most part, they're pretty pleased with the feedback they're getting and definitely still in the startup phase of that business. Meanwhile, internet access providers are saying the new software can disable users' account data necessary to use their service. When you already have an internet account and you upgrade to Windows 95, Microsoft, according to CompuServe, makes it very difficult to restore your old account. Intel's next-generation chip, the P6, will be able to run circles around the Pentium, but could fall down on the job when it comes to running many existing Microsoft programs. The reason? The P6 was designed for advanced 32-bit operating systems such as Unix and Windows NT, and to save space on the chip, Intel left out transistors that would have speeded up older 16-bit programs. The omission may leave a window of opportunity for rival chip makers whose next-generation chips are designed to speed up 16-bit code as well as 32-bit applications. Intel is gambling, however, that by the time the P6 is in full production in 1997, the old 16-bit programs will be obsolete. The increasing sophistication of computers and communications is making possible a steady shift of certain high-tech jobs from the United States to countries overseas, such as India, where experienced programmers receive salaries of only $1,200 to $1,500 a month, one-fourth that of similarly skilled American programmers. Because of the intense pressure to stay competitive in the global marketplace, one economist has told the New York Times companies will continue to be tempted to use less expensive foreign labor. This, he says, is relentless. A presidential task force has recommended that electronic transmission of books, magazine articles, and software should be classified as copies subject to existing copyright laws. The task force also recommends that it should be illegal to make or distribute products aimed at decoding encrypted software without the consent of the copyright owner. That's great news, according to the president of the Software Publishers Association. Intel's co-founder, Gordon Moore, has predicted this past week that with the processing power and software developing together, we are not very many years away from using the computer as a virtual dictating machine. Moore predicts that you will be able to talk into a computer and it will print out exactly what you said, or, and this would be the big advance, you'll be able to type out a message in English and it will be translated immediately into another language. That's this week's Computer News. You're listening to Sound Bites. And welcome back. We are here with you on Soundbites and WXXI Rochester and WEOS-FM Geneva. I'm Bob Smith. Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Paula Chapman are around the table with me. And of course, we invite you to join us, 716-263-WXXI. And I'm happy to say we can once again receive electronic mail at the old address of soundbites@AOL.com. However, we're still working out the situation regarding taking email questions live on the air. Can't do that for a while yet. We'll let you know when we'll be able to do that service.
Yeah, but we got an older Nick Francesco.
Until tomorrow.
29 again?
39.
Oh, 39?
Me and Jack Benny, 39 years old tomorrow. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, I remember that birthday, too.
Yeah, so do I.
It wasn't so many years ago.
Five times. This is my fifth anniversary of my 39th birthday. I'm 45 tomorrow.
Oh, I did interesting thing last night. I went to my 25th high school reunion.
Oh, isn't that a humbling experience?
Whoa. I can do you better. I'm coming up on 30.
Yeah, that's because you're old.
Yeah, I know. I'm the oldest one here.
Not by much.
Not really. You're going to be 45?
Yes.
I'll be 47.
See, so. You are old. Thank Bob's going to be, what, 22?
Something like that.
A year older than Esther, I think.
23. 23, I think. Something like that, anyway.
Before we go too far, I have to share this with everybody. Last week we had a call from a guy who said, I don't know if you remember this, but he said that he had a certain amount of space on his drive, and then he did something else to it, and he had more space all
the time. Oh, yeah, he was gaining space instead of losing.
He was gaining space on his drive. He said, here's the answer. He said, this came to me via email, nick@divinet.com. I don't know if you can get this, because this Microsoft Exchange program is about as clear as mud. I can say that now, since Paul no longer works for Microsoft. Normally, I would just say, ooh, I can't read the first sentence, because she hurt me. She's driven to the studio to hurt me. Anyway, I called you guys at Soundbites about my D drive having more space than it should. I found that the new Norton utility program mucked it up somehow. I uninstalled it and things straightened out. Reinstalled and still good so far. Guess I'll have to put your picture back up on my wallpaper. Thanks, all you guys, for a great service. Charlie. Well, Charlie, I'm glad to see that that worked for you. And as I send in your email, if you need a new picture, let us know, because we'll take some sort of electronic group shot and put it up on the internet somewhere.
That's right. And they will each individually have their own concentric circles around it.
Suitable for darting, right?
Exactly. You got it, troops. 716-263-WXXI is our number, and I tell you what, we're not going to wait any longer. Let's get right to the telephones and your questions, and hi, you're on the air on Soundbites. Go ahead, caller. You are on. Now, hi, you're on the air.
Yes. I have an LC Macintosh, and I have a problem with my floppy disk. It does not mount on the desktop.
That sounds like an actual hardware problem. Yeah. I suggest you really have to take it. There's nothing you can do software-wise. You're going to have to take it to a hardware dealer like
MacCheck, Dave Marino.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And they're in the phone book. I don't have the number.
He's over on 441
near 250. 441
near 250.
Route 441 near Route 250.
Yeah, what's right the name
near,
again?
The MacCheck, and like I said, he's right on 441. It's just before the Wegmans.
Okay.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Give him a call. We sent you.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
And we thank you very much for calling. Just peripherally, why would something like that happen? What's usually the hardware failure that happens to cause that kind of thing?
They just wear out. It's just like anything else. You know, you keep using them and using them. Over time, even disk drives, they're usually the first thing to go on a computer.
Yeah. Sometimes if you're really lucky, it's something as simple as a cable came loose.
Yeah.
It may need cleaning. It may be that's the first thing to try is to clean it. Now, the fellow may want to try cleaning it himself. I don't know why we didn't suggest that. That was silly.
But on the Mac, though, there's more of an ejection mechanism in that, and more to go wrong with it than on a PC. A PC, you actually have to physically go over, hit the button for it to push it out. A Mac will sit there, and you just put it in slightly and just touch it, and all of a sudden, it sucks it on in. When it's done, it spits it back out at it.
Right.
So there's more of a mechanism and more to go wrong there.
And that's the first thing to go, the mechanism.
Well, usually, especially with some of these newer discs, I've also had folks, in fact, I had one lady come to the shop, couldn't get anything into her disk drive. Of course, her child had been over there playing with the computer, and I pulled out, and we didn't use it, though. We pulled out her Wegmans card, and a real nice slide. The slide got mangled.
Cool.
But after that, she could then put disk in there. But she was wondering why we couldn't get anything in there. And, you know, the other thing, though, that happens is on some of these cheaper discs, the little shutter blade will fall off, and that gets stuck in there. You pull the disc out, and I said, wait a minute, there's something wrong with this disc, and you're missing the silver.
Or they bend, and then they get caught on the lip.
Yeah. And then I got to sit there and take everything apart, pull them together. We got this nice long tweezers that we can pull out.
Right. On the frog pond one day, I caught my daughter sticking 5 1/4-inch disc between the two disc drives.
One commercial doesn't help, you know? This thing defeats things, and you see the kid shoving, you know, the tape in there, and then there's oatmeal and everything else.
The one time the kid shoved a peanut butter sandwich into the VCR,
I
wanted to cringe because I know there are CD-ROM drives that have eaten grilled cheese sandwiches.
Yep.
Ooh. 263-WXXI. Don't try that at home, folks. We're professionals. Let's go back to the folks right now. And hi, you're on the air on Soundbites.
I'm ready to throw it against the wall. Oh, wait a minute. That's the wrong line. Actually, I am ready to throw it against the wall. Got a little problem here, fellas. I need some instant advice here.
Drop back and kick.
Yeah, well, I had a compressed C drive that wouldn't hold everything. So I went out and bought a huge hard drive. That's what I call it, my huge hard drive.
Right.
And I made the new hard drive, drive D. I copied all the stuff from the compressed hard drive to the new drive, thinking, okay, now I'm set. I made the new huge drive, drive C, and it boots up to the point where I get a screen that shows me the Microsoft Windows 95 startup menu, and underneath the 123456, it says, warning, Windows has detected a compressed drive access error. Choose safe mode command prompt only to help you identify the problem. I can't identify the bleeding problem.
The problem is that Windows 95 still thinks you have a compressed drive, and you don't.
How do I convince it otherwise?
Well, one, when you switch these drives over, you still got the old C drive in there?
No, the old C drive's out of the loop now.
Okay, so you took it out and you made this new, what was DAC, and it's your set as an active partition.
Right, and it's and it boots up fine. I mean, you know, it's got all the necessary files on it to do the job, but you've assessed the problem correctly. Windows still sees it as a compressed drive. Now, how do I convince it it's not?
You need to go, all right, now do this from memory, because I don't compress drives. I don't believe in it. It's a religious thing.
Yeah, same.
Well, I don't anymore now that I've got, you know, 1.2 gigabytes, but when you only have 135 megabyte drive, you compress.
Yeah. Right. What you need to do is you need to go into the control panels.
Oh, I can't get. I can't get to Windows.
No, you can't get there.
Because you're in safe mode.
Yep, can't get there from here. Because
I don't think removing the double space dot bin is going to help.
Oh, no. No, that's the first thing I did.
What happens when you boot from a system disk just off the A drive?
From a system disk off the A drive.
Right. Or from the recovery disk. You didn't make a recovery disk, did you?
Well, that gets complicated.
He meant to do that.
I'll tell you what I did. I took the opportunity, as long as I was going to change into this huge hard drive, to also reverse my floppy disks.
Yeah.
One of which, so now the rescue disk is here, but it's a big 5 1/4, five and,
instead of 3 1/2.
But that's easy to fix. That you can easily switch the cables.
I could go back. Yes, you're right. I could go back. I've got a Norton 95 rescue disk, if that makes any difference.
To Norton 95 it would, but in your situation, no.
I mean, it's got the system files and everything on it, and it's a 3 1/2 inch floppy.
You might try it.
Well, I'm doing that. You know, I've listened to this program before.
Yeah, you might try that, but my suggestion would be to boot up from the rescue disk.
Go back to, switch the cables and get back there.
Okay, and boot up from the rescue disk, and what do you anticipate will happen at that point, that I will be able to get into Windows
proper? It should come up and tell you that it's found a problem. Do you want to fix that?
Yeah, what it needs to do is at some point go back and make sure that you choose uncompressed disk.
The answer to your question about booting up with a floppy is that you go to an A prompt and that's it. The cursor sits there and flashes at you.
On the Norton.
All right, I'll give that a whirl.
But now try going over to the C drive and typing Win.
Right.
Okay. Even as we says bad command or file name.
Yeah, because the high mem and that didn't get loaded.
Yeah.
Yeah, comfortable, huh?
Yeah, I'm afraid you're going to have to go with the rescue disk. Give that a try, let us know.
Okay. Well, it's a long show. I may be back.
We'll be looking forward to the second installment here of this drama.
At least for another 45 minutes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
Hey, thanks a lot. Good luck, my friend. Let's go next to another call at 263-WXXI, area code 716, as Soundbite continues. Hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
This is Kurt from Brighton.
Hi, Nathan.
Hi, Kurt.
I want to spend some of my pile of money on...
Great, call me later. Where are we going to dinner?
I want to try to swallow on a laptop and also on something to back up my great work. I am using primarily C++ for simulation, and I like to develop one program while another one is running simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
I also use sometimes Excel. It's data intensive, and I want it to be compatible with a docking station. It's a standalone machine, so I'm not on a network with other machines, but I do need a modem, and I would prefer to buy the machine loaded with the software so that if software is incompatible, with Microsoft Windows, so if something is incompatible with the machine, it's somebody else's problem.
NEC puts out one heck of a product. If you're looking for a laptop with a docking station, you could also have the modem loaded right into the docking station, along with, a tape drive that could be in the 5 1/4 bay that you could sit there and, you know, do your backups to, and then the 3 1/2 inch slot, if you wanted to, also put in another hard drive in.
Do you know a number or something?
NEC.
A phone number for NEC?
As a machine number.
It's whatever your pocketbook can, afford.
They make a couple of dozen different versions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're right up in, they've also got the Pentiums, which is something that it sounds like you really want the power and, juice there to, develop, compile one program and be working on another and not have the system slow down. So you'll definitely want to get into a Pentium system. Plus, they also come with a variety of CD-ROMs. I mean, internal CD-ROMs.
Within the laptop?
Within the laptop.
Okay, and they come loaded with some operating system?
Yeah, 99% of them all come with the operating system, now Windows 95, and a bunch of software.
And you can even get it Office installed and stuff like that?
Now, on the operating system, I have heard I should be careful about Windows NT, because Windows NT is not compatible with everything, and some ordinary off-the-shelf software may not be completely compatible with Windows NT.
Are you running a lot of DOS applications?
No, I'm primarily running a Windows application, and I also have been told that I shouldn't yet switch to Windows 95 because of it might still have some problems, and I mean wait a while.
That's just a religious thing.
Look how hard it is. She still has this Microsoft reflex that she can't say.
Nick, I'm sorry. I'm never going to recommend GeoWorks.
If you are running a product, if you're running a product like, for example, Borland's Turbo C++ or Microsoft Visual C.
Microsoft Visual C.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you wanted to go to Windows 95, there actually is a version for Windows 95, which is very good, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, 32-bit?
Right, and it's all 32-bit and yada, yada, yada. But if what you're writing is for a Windows-only market, my suggestion is to stick with the market you're selling to, so you want to get a Windows-based machine. But that you can...
Well, I'm just writing for myself.
Well, then it doesn't matter. I have used, although I am not a big C fan, I have used Visual C++ on Windows 95. It is slick and it is fast. So it's a pretty nice product if that's the kind of thing you're looking for. Do you have a fax machine?
Yes.
NEC has a fax back service where, you know, you dial in and it says to get a list of documents, press this and give us your fax number and we'll fax it back to you.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get a list of the documents that they have, which would include descriptions of all of their laptops.
Mm-hmm.
That fax back number, if you've got a pen,
mm-hmm.
is 800-366-0476.
0476. And how does one buy NECs in stores or mail?
They'll also tell you where your local dealers are.
Yeah, yeah. And
all the major retailers will probably carry that line or be able to get it for you.
I would suggest you let your fingers do the walking and find half a dozen local stores to carry them. Go down and see the various brands that are available. That'll help you make a selection.
Okay, Kurt.
One last thing. Is there a seasonality in computer prices that, say, are cheaper before Christmas?
Yeah. January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August.
Okay,
they keep going down.
Yeah. December's the month you don't.
That's right. You may find sales in January. That's hard to predict this year for a lot of reasons, but usually you find somewhat cheaper prices in January, but I don't think they're going to go down this year.
Computing power is cheap.
Yeah, but I don't think they're going to go down this year because of the RAM shortages and Windows 95 needing more.
They've got no reason to.
Thank you, Nick. Great show.
Thank you very much, Kurt.
Right. They're in the driver's seat right now, so they've got no reason. It's just like hard drives. You saw hard drives for the longest time dropping like a rock, and now they've all of a sudden leveled off, and they've kept them bulking.
Yep.
For what you get, you're getting a lot of value for money anyway, so I don't think you've got any right to complain.
Oh, yeah.
And we are going to go next to another caller as soon as we remind you that you've got sound bites in WXXI Rochester, WEOS FM Geneva. I'm Bob Smith, and around the table with me, Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Paula Chapman. And you, when you call in with your questions. And hi, you're on the air. Welcome to Sound Bites.
Hi, guys. I'm Jay calling from Chi-Li.
Hey, Jay.
Hi. Hey, Nick and Dave, I saw you on television last weekend.
Thank you.
It was a pretty good show.
Thanks.
We had fun.
Kind of frightening seeing us in the flesh, isn't it?
After the initial shock, it was pretty good.
Yeah. Well, you wanted to keep on surfing, right?
Do you think you guys will do that again at all?
Who knows? We'd love to.
Okay, it was really interesting.
Thank you.
My question, I'm thinking about using DriveSpace, and after a couple of calls...
Do you really hate your computer?
I'm thinking about it. I wonder now, but does it cost you anything in terms of performance?
Oh, yeah.
It definitely
does.
Really?
And also, nowadays... I think, personally, the utilities are still not to the point where it's easy to recover when you have a problem with a compressed drive. With that and the performance hit that you take, which is not great, but is there, for my money, you know, it's way better to just buy another hard drive. Cheese and crackers, you can get an 850 meg drive for $250 bucks.
So 1 gig for $300, and, I mean, you're not taking the chance then of, you know, all of the... one of the files gets destroyed, and all of a sudden, like, Stacker or that, and it messes it up, and now, oh, I haven't backed up in quite a while. There goes everything. I mean, it's just not worth it.
I'm just not a fan of compression. I understand that there are times when you need it. You know, you get free compression with the system. It is cheaper than a hard drive if you can't afford another hard drive. If you're on a laptop where another 80-meg drive costs you $7 billion, then, yeah, compression. But for the average system, spend a couple of $100 and get yourself an 850-meg drive, and you get way more space than the compression would have given you. It's faster. Two drives makes the system faster anyway if you keep programs on one and documents on the other and put your swap space in a different drive from your applications and yada, yada, yada. The performance gains, as well as this peace of mind, are well worth it.
Okay, guys.
There's so much more to say for it than there is, you know, buying the extra drive than you could ever say against the disk compression programs.
And thank you very much for calling.
Okay, thanks a lot.
And before we go to the next call, I do want to pass along an off-air call with a solution idea for the fellow who called in with a Mac Apple problem at the top of the show. He says it could be an extension conflict with the RAM doubler and suggests that our first caller try booting up with the shift key held down. We'll see what happens there. 263-WXXI, area code 716. Now, hi, you're on the air on Soundbites.
Hi, how you doing, guys? This is Brian from Honey Oak Falls.
Hey, Brian.
Good. I have a question. I was helping a friend out with a problem. He moved a computer, and apparently it got jarred because he went to boot it up to do his bowling scores for his bowling league.
One of the most important applications in computers today.
Right, and he was getting a drive boot failure. So I took over a boot floppy and was able to get him booted up, and he could run some applications off his hard drive. He had an old copy of Norton on there, which would not run because it said it had... It was a problem with the file. I assumed it meant that some of the sectors in that file were damaged.
Yeah.
Is this something I can fix with a Norton Disk Doctor or even like Scandisk from DOS 6.22 or something?
If the problem is that there are bad sectors on a hard drive, ScanDrive will shut them out, but it won't save the programs that are on there. The same is true of Norton. The first thing I would suggest you do is open the case.
Check the cables. You've moved that thing around. And if it's acting flaky, you might want to first double check and make sure that all your cable connections are still solid.
And the boards are seated correctly.
Yeah.
I would actually say before he even opens the case, if he can back up his data, would be my
first. That's true. There's a good thought. Back
right.
up. Wow.
Right. Well, we're past that.
Yep.
That was the first thing I had him do was check to make sure all the cables were seated properly and stuff. I didn't actually do it, but he did. I did peek in there and didn't see anything wrong.
Well, like you say, sometimes you might just want to pull a card out and reseat it. Sometimes, you know, just moving it around.
Right.
It might look like it's seated.
I just put a new hard drive in my machine at home and I installed it and did everything and booted up and no new drive. And I looked and somewhere in putting a cable in, I loosened the cable that was on the hard drive. So I had to push it back. It looked fine, but when I pushed on it, it went in about a quarter of an inch and bang, there it was. Unbelievable.
Wow.
So yeah, you know, definitely recheck those. But other than that, how old is this machine?
It's a 286, and I'm pretty sure it's an MFM drive. It does, because I have one just like
And the setup is all right in it?
Yeah.
You can get into the setup program and make sure it's seeing the correct drive and everything else?
Actually, I don't know. It's one that I couldn't find in my PC upgraders Bible there.
What is it?
The Stanford is the brand name.
Stanford?
Stanford, like Stanford, Connecticut.
Yeah.
And that's the BIOS, too. The BIOS comes up with the name Stanford on it.
What's the hard drive, actually?
The hard drive is a Seagate ST-225.
Oh, Seagate. All right. That I know. ST-225?
It's got 17 sectors.
Yep. I got one sitting in my basement. I thought I could even just swap hard drives.
I want to say five heads.
Well, hold on. I'll look at it. You're probably quite right. 225. 21-meg hard drive?
Yep.
Four heads. 225 or 225N?
225.
Okay, or 225R.
That's RL.
Yeah, I know. 225 is four heads,
uh-huh.
615 cylinders,
uh-huh.
17 sectors per track.
Uh-huh.
I forget what HCS stands for, but none 300 and 614.
Okay.
And, this is interesting. There is no translate HCS.
No,
there is no translate HCS.
Yeah.
But the RWC and the WPC are none 300, 614. I don't think that even matters anymore.
Yeah, no, those you can just put zero.
And the landing zone is 670. out of 615. That's not bad.
I usually just put zeros and run into lots of problems.
Yeah.
Just put in the cylinders, make sure the cylinders, heads, and sectors are in there correctly.
Right, four heads, 615 cylinders, and 17 sectors per track. Those are the important ones.
Is this one likely to be a some kind of a variation on the three-finger salute to get it to go into setup? Like control, insert, delete, or something like that?
You can try, here's different combinations you can try. You can try control, alt, enter, control, alt, tab, control, alt, escape, control, alt, S.
A lot of those, though, had separate discs with the setup.
Yeah, 286s usually had their own disc.
Okay.
Good luck.
I know my Tandy does, but...
Yeah. Good luck.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you very much for calling, and who knows, may get the old machine, the old warhorse running once again. 263-WXXI, area code 716, is how you join us and your users group of the air sound bites here on WXXI 1370 Rochester and WEOS FM 89.7 in Geneva. I'm Bob Smith. Around the table with me, Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Paula Chapman. And, of course, you, when you call in. We'd love to hear from you. Let's go to another call right now. Hi, you're on the air on Sound Bites.
Hi, this is Jim from Greece.
Hey, Jim.
Two comments. First, for the gentleman with the Apple, the LC2 problem.
Yeah, yep.
At that super drive, 1.44 megabyte.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a little switch off on the side at the back. It basically sends a command to the system to tell it the disk has been inserted.
Mm-hmm.
It bends over a lot. Happens on mine quite a bit.
Ah.
So if he is handy and he can pop the case off, he could look and see if that switch is bent slightly and just bend it back the other way, kind of straighten it up, and then he might find that he can, the computer will see the disk.
Cool.
Okay, thanks. Second.
Is that a pretty fragile switch? Should he be very careful?
No, the switch itself is pretty good. It's just the sheet metal is pretty thin, and it's not bent to lend any structural support to it. So it's kind of fragile, the sheet metal itself.
Right.
But
so you got to be a little careful bending it back.
I would. I wouldn't bend any more than was necessary to straighten it up.
Right.
Second comment, I got one of the old original ATs that I've lent my brother-in-law, and he's giving it back, and I'm lending it to another brother-in-law. question is, what's the economics on either trying to upgrade it or just say that's the way it's going to be and
that's
go out and buy
something
else?
That's the way it's going to be and save your pennies. The price of systems have gotten so low that you'd spend more to upgrade that than you could go out and buy a whole new system.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, thanks.
Yep.
Great show.
Hey, thank you very much. Glad to be bringing it to you. Boy, that system's kind of getting passed around like a collection plate, isn't it?
But that's good, though. I mean, there's a lot of places, though, and I think Nick runs into them, too, that, you know, a 286, that's all they need.
Yeah. For a person who has no computer, a 286 is a heck of a machine.
Oh, really?
That's right. And probably, let's be honest about it. Much as we love our 486s, Pentiums, and everything else, and our Power Macs, you probably won't find all that much that you can't do with a 386 for most business applications.
I defy any person right out there right now that, and I'll bet you over 90% of them do not use even a quarter of the potential of the power that's in that box that's sitting on their desktop, either at home or at work.
That's very true. I have a friend who is still using an old Osborne 1 for as long as it lives to write. She writes books, and all she does is print them out on a little daisy wheel printer, which is still running. And Diablo 630, yep. And that thing will never die. Her great-great-great-grandchildren could still use it. And then she sends it off to the publisher, and that's all she cares about. And it works great, and she still uses WordStar probably 2.1 or some silly thing. She's happy as a little clam, and it works perfectly for her. What more do you need?
Yeah.
You know, she's very happy. And a lot of people, you're right, a lot of people don't use the power that they've got, and they don't need it. I mean, people are always saying, you know, wow, I've got to save my money and buy something like Office. If you buy ClarisWorks or Microsoft Works, you get all the functionality most people ever need.
Yep.
For real. You know, yeah, wouldn't it be great to be able to sweep a spreadsheet into your word processing document with one mouse click? But how many people actually need to do that on a daily basis? Dear Aunt May, here's the amount of money I paid on phone calls to in the last year. Who cares?
You would have to hate somebody very much in order to prepare a document like that.
That's too much free time.
Yeah, ain't that the truth?
That is the sign of somebody who needs a life, let me tell you. But we know you all have lives. You're spending a little bit of it with us, so let's go to the phones at 263-WXXI, and hi, you're on the air on Soundbites. Welcome.
Hi, guys. This is Bill from Webster.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, I got a back from vacation problem.
Came yeah, don't come back.
You should have stayed in Tahiti.
That must have been it. Came back and tried to dial into the bulletin board to get our mail, and we couldn't connect with the modem.
Which bulletin board?
In that class stand. Now, it wasn't their problem. It was a problem with my modem.
Ah.
I wasn't able to reach the modem, but the modem lights were on, but they were dim.
They were... Ooh, I bet...
The question is, am I doomed, or is there an easy fix for something like that?
I bet you were hit by lightning.
You got it. There's a lot of that going around lately, and it's been pretty prosperous for me.
Yeah, I bet it has been.
I mean, I had a computer come in, and the top of a chip was blown off. The computer was unplugged, but one other thing they forgot to do was undo the phone line.
Okay, that's the one thing I don't have protected.
You got it.
What I might suggest you do is, if you can... Sounds like an external modem, because it's got light.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I would suggest borrowing a modem from a friend and plugging in and seeing if it works. If it does, your modem is dead. The good news is modems aren't terribly expensive nowadays.
Right.
So I would give that a try first.
I thought with the lights on, there still might be a fix.
No, I've seen them light up.
Lights are on, but nobody's home.
Nobody's picking up the phone.
So I'm doing that.
Yeah. Sorry. Well, no, I would suggest you try somebody else's modem, because if that doesn't work, could be the cable, could be the phone line if it's a separate phone line, could be the phone cable. I mean,
the other thing, though, is what speed modem was it?
It's a 14.4.
Now you got justification to go out and get a 28.8.
God is telling you. You're
going to tell my wife that? Pardon? You're going to tell my wife that?
Oh, no problem.
You're on the phone.
You have been officially informed.
Fantastic. I appreciate
that. Experts are telling you have to get that 28.8.
Honey. Sorry, they said it's dead. Got to go for a new 28-8.
Great. I got a tape of this program?
12WXXI, I'll make you a tape.
Thanks a lot.
And hey, thank you very much. Glad to be of service to you, sir. And let's take another call right now. And hi, you're on the air on Soundbites.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a gateway.
Who do we have here?
This is Steve from Rochester.
Hi, Steve.
I have a gateway system, 486, that came installed with Microsoft Office Professional.
Mm-hmm.
And from the beginning, I've had an intermittent lockup problem when I've been saving files from either Word or PowerPoint to the A disk.
Does that gateway have the power system on it? The power, there's an energy system on it?
Yes.
Disable it.
Okay.
It's been causing
a lot of people to have various programs lock up on them.
And even though I'm saving to the A drive?
Yeah.
Okay, because let me just give you the brief history.
Mm-hmm.
I called Microsoft and they said, you have an unstable video driver, switch to VGA. I did, and I did not encounter the problem. I then called the people who provided the video card and they said, you need new drivers. So I've uploaded 3 new sets of drivers and finally Gateway has sent me a new video card. So I put the new video card in, and the minute that I did, I now got a conflict with my DeskJet printer that came up. And it said...
It's so rare that the video card will conflict with the printer, but you've been lucky.
Thank you. So now what I'm looking at is Gateway has also sent me a new floppy disk, and they said, try that.
A drive?
A new floppy drive, I'm sorry, yeah. So I'm intrigued by looking at yet another... solution before I install the new floppy drive.
It takes all of 50 seconds to go into setup, turn off the power management, and give it a try.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that would just be when you boot up, hit F2?
Yep.
Okay.
And when you get into the thing, there's somewhere in the menus is power management.
Also, check sometimes in the config file, you also get a power management program. Okay. That's a load.
And what would that be called?
Something with the name power in it.
Oh.
I forget the actual the name of the program, but it's either in the config or auto exec, and it's well documented that Gateway has been recommending to folks to put a REM statement in front of it and not use it.
Okay, and one last question. If you tried to, while you were printing to the DeskJet, if you tried to save the file, could with 8 meg of RAM, would you ever lock up the system? If you're trying to do too many things at once?
Possible.
I think you could.
It's possible. You're right, it shouldn't be that way, but it's possible.
All right, and thanks for the suggestion about putting CyberCom in.
Oh, good. Did it work well for you?
It worked very well.
Great.
Very straightforward.
Yeah, very easy to use, and boy, is it a good product.
Thank you for your help.
Thank you.
Hey, our pleasure. That's what we're here for. 263-WXXI, area code 716, is how you join in on Soundbites, and good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Joe from Rochester.
Hey, Joe.
You guys ready to feel a warp question?
Sure we are.
Okay.
Okay.
Warp drives engaged.
Do we have to actually answer it or just feel it?
No, he just
feel
has feel it.
Right.
He feels it.
Okay, I'm ready for that.
Our warp drives are engaged even though we usually go on impulse, okay? Here we go.
Or, God knows we go on impulse.
That's
here.
Right, yeah.
Go ahead.
Or good field, no hit. Okay, they're both printing questions, and one is I'm trying to get the operating system to print it condensed for me on my Epson 850. But I have a spreadsheet they use for estimation, and it prints two-thirds of a page and then goes down to the next page. Now it prints condensed fine because I pushed the condense button. could get the whole spreadsheet on one single 8.5 by 11, but it keeps doing two pages for me, no matter what I try to do.
Could it be in the actual page margin?
What program are you? What spreadsheet?
Whatever that works program that came with Warp.
Okay, where is it in there? There is a place where you can tell it. Essentially, what you really need to do is, okay, Warp is a graphical user. It has a graphical user interface.
Right.
Okay. So, don't ever touch a printer. Change the font in the spreadsheet.
Oh, okay.
What's happening is that, in the old days, you would tell a program...
It was 132.
Just print all this and ignore whatever the printer does.
Right.
And then you would tell the printer, just take all the data and make it 132 characters.
Right.
Nowadays, things are much more closely married. Programs are smarter because they have a graphical interface.
Right.
You can't fake them out by saying, just print all this and then tell the printer to do something.
That's what I'm discovering.
Leave the printer where it is, change the font down in the spreadsheet,
okay,
until you see it go all the way across.
Okay.
Also, when you print it, you can put it in landscape mode,
mm-hmm,
and then it'll print sideways, and you can make the text a little bigger.
Okay, funny you should bring that up, because my second printing question was, second of two, was I got this great idea to put my computer in 8514 video mode and cut out an AutoCAD drawing I've got so that I can click on an icon and print my drawing along with my bill of materials, along with a couple other things that I need to make the product we make. And I can cut out the 8514 page from AutoCAD, fine, save it, bring it, import it into my document, put it in landscape mode, looks fantastic on the screen, but then when I shoot it out to print on the laser printer, it don't print. It doesn't print at all.
Okay, that's a different problem altogether. First solve the first problem. Okay. They may be related because you're telling it just print this and go.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is make sure that you are using the correct driver for your printer. Often enough, if you haven't got the correct driver...
It prints fine portrait, but it won't print landscape. That's the problem. Oh, by the way, this is a Kodak 7016, one of those ones that I think four of us bought. One, I bought a printer.
Oh,
that,
you're the one.
Yeah. it's been a great product, and it prints great...
You found them, Nick.
It prints great portrait, but not landscape.
First try again changing the font, because it may just be that you're confusing the driver.
Mm-hmm.
By telling it, you got to print this one way and that the other way and this something else. So
okay.
Try changing that first.
Okay.
And printing the whole thing landscape.
Yep.
If that doesn't work, my suggestion is to call Kodak about a driver.
Okay.
They may have an update to the driver.
Good thought. Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Sure.
Yeah. Hey, that's our pleasure.
Okay.
We're here to answer your questions at 716-263-WXXI. I'm Bob Smith. It is Sound Bites on WXXI 1370 Rochester and WEOS-FM 89.7 in Geneva. Our expert panel around the table with me today, Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Paula Chapman, here to answer your questions. And I've got to admit, just before we go back to the phones, I can't resist a couple of these help desk questions of a type that we have never, ever, ever once heard on Sound Bites, I'm very happy to say. However, there are some folks who either have warped senses of humor, what they call help desks, or are rude novices when they come to computing. I'm thinking of this guy who called... bought a computer from Dell, one of the largest and most reputable hardware companies in the country, and he called back in to complain his keyboard didn't work. He had kept it clean, he said, by filling his tub with soap and water and soaking it for a day and then removing the keys and washing it individually.
That can be it. There are solutions you can use to dump a keyboard into a bucket of soapy water and let it dry. But once you start pulling those keys off, you lose those little springs. Yeah. Real hard to get that.
And I think Dell must get the ball, too, because there was another Dell technician who said he once had to calm down a man who became enraged because his computer had told him he was bad and an invalid. And this fellow had to explain to him that bad command and invalid response should not be taken personally.
Well, the usual ones down there is hit the any key.
Yeah, right.
And they call up and say, I can't find the any key. And say, well, that should be changed. Hit the enter key. I like this other one here. I pushed on the foot pedal and nothing happened. The woman replied. Foot pedal, the technician replied. Yes, the woman said. The little white pedal with the on switch. Foot pedal, it turns out, was the computer mouse, a hand-operated device that controls the computer operation.
Yeah. Has anybody tried to operate a mouse by sliding it along the floor with your foot, your big toe?
No, the best.
They had that.
Yep.
There used to be a device you could buy that looked like a treadle from a stone machine, and you could put your feet on it and work the mouse that way while you were typing and go, you had to have really good thigh muscles to get your feet off of that mouse while you were working, but you could do that.
The best one, though, is that commercial where they show a computer training. And they show a girl holding the mouse upside down and moving the ball.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. That's good mouse operation.
Right, now,
that was almost as good as, I think it was, Edson Chekhov in one of the Star Trek movies encountering
a Mac. We're going to get called.
We're going to get called.
It was Scotty. He talks to the computer, he says, Computer? And the guy says, no, you have to use this and hands him the mouse. He goes, oh, old technology. And he talks into the mouse. He's Computer.
Right.
Before we go on, I just have this one thing that happened to us. At RIT, we have a lot of distance learning students from all over the world, actually, who take courses via the computer. They dial into RIT's VAC system and take courses. And this one guy called up one of our support people who helped him 5, 6, 8, 10 times trying to get his system to work. Now, the tough part is when it's a modem question. You give them something to try, then they have to hang up, because most people only have one phone line. So the guy would hang up, try it, call back, give him something else to try, hang up, call back, give it. Finally, my friend who was on the phone said, what's that noise in the background? And I said, oh, well, I'm in a phone booth on the corner. And he said, why are you in a phone booth? He said, I don't have a phone in my apartment. And so our support guy said, what's the modem connected to? And the guy said, connected?
Oh, boy.
That was kind of a fundamental problem. We should have really asked that question first.
He definitely wasn't connected. Oh,
it's not the thing you think to ask. I'm having a problem with my modem. Do you have a phone? It's not the thing you ask first.
Yeah, going through life unplugged from the wall. Definitely is not the way to go.
Computers unplugged. Oh, man.
716-263-WXXI and hi, you're on the air on Soundbites. Welcome.
Hi, guys. This is Alan from Rochester.
Yes, Alan.
I have a Microsoft Office Pro upgrade question. I have Access 1.0, and when I upgraded to the MS Office Pro 4.3, and when I try to run that Access, I get a general production error.
In terms of trying to even open up a file that you've already got?
What happened is I can go into the Access, the new Access, I guess, 2.0, and I can open a sample file.
Okay.
And then maybe after 15, 20 seconds later, I have this thing popping up.
Even in the sample file?
Yeah.
Hey.
How much memory do you have?
Uh-huh, 8 megabytes.
What else are you running?
That's it.
How big is a swap file?
I don't know.
Mm. That's an extreme problem. One of the first things you might want to try
is
when you've got Access open, before you open up a database, there's a file menu and then there's a utilities menu.
Yeah.
Go into the utilities menu and see if you're even able to import an old Access 1.0 file into Access 2.0 and see if it'll at least do the conversion. And then if it can, well, of course, if it's opening a sample file, which is in a 2.0
file.
Yeah, see, I can open the old file. And what happens after I open the old file, and again after 10, 15 seconds, the general production error comes up and gives me an address of EFS, you know.
An address.
In your config.sys.
Yes.
You're loading HiMem.
Uh-huh.
You're loading EMM386.
Yes.
Are you excluding any areas from HiMem?
That I have to check.
Check to see what you're excluding and then figure out why you're excluding it and whether or not you actually need it. I'm just thinking there's got to be some sort of memory conflict with something, and you may not be excluding area that's needed by something like a video driver or something, hard disk.
Your video cards are the main culprit, so you got to exclude a certain area.
And therefore, Access is attempting to get into some piece of memory somewhere.
Uh-huh.
That's unlikely, but it's something, it's the first thing I try, I don't know.
No, I think you're on the right track. He should be exploding a certain area, maybe with his particular video card.
Yeah.
Access is trying to get at it and says, oh, wait a minute, it's busy, and that's why he's getting the error.
It's Fahrenheit 1280, which is, I think, fairly common.
I know a Fahrenheit does have a certain area of memory that it's got to have exclusive use of.
Okay, and by the way, when I try to delete the new Access 2.0 by putting on the old Access 1.0, same problem. I have the same general production error.
Yeah, it may well, but the old one worked before you put in the new one?
Yes. And now?
Well, but you upgraded Office, so it may be a whole, the whole thing is kind of
remastered.
Are you running that little Office button bar?
Doesn't matter. I can open the Office and run the Access from there. I run the Access on the, I move the icon to the program application window, run that, and or the upper right-hand corner, same result.
Yeah, I would try those things first.
Okay. By the way, a quick question. This is in terms of using my NEC laptop. When I try to get to my Excel help window, the help window cannot be open. It's a 4 megabyte memory. Do you know,
Often you run out of resources when you're trying to do help files.
Okay, that's probably memory.
Yeah, yeah, that's almost definitely memory.
Right, I'll try that. Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, hey, it's our pleasure. 263-WXXI, area code 716. It's Soundbites on WXXI Rochester and WEOS FM Geneva with Bob Smith and with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Paula Chapman. And you when you call in.
See how much harder it is when you can't just say, oh, update in 95.
Yeah. And that will solve all your problems.
It's harder now, Paula. You're out in the real world.
Yes, I'll admit it. I've met a sheltered life.
And let us go to the phones once again. Hi, you're on the air on Soundbites.
Hi, this is Art from Webster.
Hey, how are you doing?
Well, I'm frustrated. I got a new HP LaserJet 4L, installed it, and set it up so that I could get my printer panel up in DOS in a window and change printer settings.
Right.
And then made a little icon on the launch pad so that I could launch it from OS 2, and it was neat.
Yep.
All of a sudden, I'm finding that somehow or other, it's telling me that my LPC1 isn't connected. It can't find the printer. And I've checked the cables, which they say are okay. And that way I have my warp set up, I have two different, I have LPC1 and LPC2, so that I can have two different printers going. And everything works fine on LPC2, but my laser printer just won't find LPC1.
In OS 2, what's on LPC1 in the control panel?
What do you mean?
Well, what it sounds like is happening is that something is attempting to own LPC1. Can you print from OS 2? LPC1.
No, I can't print from LPC1 on anything.
Oh.
I can't. Nothing will find LPC1.
When the machine boots up, though, do you actually see, you know, how when your machine boots up, you'll get like a box up at the top of the screen? You know, it tells you how, what, you know, your...
Depends on your BIOS.
Yeah, 90, what, this is a 486?
That's a 486, yes.
Okay, you should see a little panel open up on most machines, and it'll tell you, oh, you've got a 3.5-inch floppy for your A drive.
It's fairly quick when the system is first booting up.
Now, I haven't seen that. I've gone into setup and looked, and the setup and everything there is okay, and I can't find anything in setup relating to the port.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you're actually seeing the LPC1 port.
Yeah, do you have anything like Norton Utilities or...
No, I have checked it.
Check it will tell you whether or not you have an LPC1.
I think it's the port. I really do.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
I'm thinking it's actually a hardware problem.
If you went to the DOS command and got out to the DOS prompt, you could type MSD. Which I
not
I thought if you go out to the DOS environment and...
He doesn't have a Microsoft.
He's running PC DOS.
But isn't there a comparable thing in OS 2?
Yeah.
Actually, no.
There are other utilities.
It's a dual boot system, and I go into DOS where I had to set up the printer anyhow because that's the only way that I could set it up, and it was very neat because I could just put the icon for the bat file on the launch pad, and it would automatically run the DOS program and put up the display of the panel, and I could change the printer set. This all was working when I first set it up.
Well, the simplest way to find out if your printer port is running is, get out to the DOS prompt.
I did that.
Okay.
My PIR with the print2PRN, and I can't find the LPC1.
It sounds like you got the port gone.
If you're lucky, it's on a card, and then you can just replace that card.
Unfortunately, I have LPC1 on the motherboard, and LPC2 is on a card.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you're going to have to disable it on the motherboard, pick up another printer card.
And go from there.
And then you can need two ports.
You might just want to disable LPC1 and go to an A-B switch.
I could still do that, but I mean, I don't mind getting another card.
Yeah, the $15 or whatever they are. Couple of ports.
It sounds like you've got a physical hardware problem.
It sounds like a real hardware problem there.
Okay.
Good luck, my man.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, we go back to another call right now, and hi, you're on the air on Soundbites.
Hi, I use a Macintosh Sub-5 Quadro.
Who do we have here?
This is John Rontes.
Hey, John.
Yeah, enjoy your show.
Thank you.
You all wear pocket protectors?
No.
Even with my t-shirt.
Well, they pack like tape on the glasses, but, you know, no pocket protectors.
I got the paper cut removed.
I do have a slide rule tattoo on my ankle.
What's your favorite? I really enjoy my Macintosh. I'm basically computer illiterate. But I have a started a business, and I've been running FileMaker to do PC, like a 286 or something, and a sort of low-level, you know, what maybe was state-of-the-art 8 years ago program, and get that for print.
That would be a lot faster. So you're saying the program is not slow, it's just the printing is slow.
Right.
What you print?
Calwriter.
That's right. Calwriter is a pretty slow printer to begin with, and when it's in graphic mode, it's even slower. What I might suggest you do, if you know somebody who's got even a low-end laser printer, and bring it over. Max printer.
Yeah.
Plug it in, see how much faster it is when you're not in the Stylewriter.
Yeah.
Even, I don't care what other printer, what other computer you buy, if you plug it into the Stylewriter, it's still printing the Stylewriter speed.
Yeah, I had a dot matrix printer, a Panasonic with an orange something.
The orange micro.
And very, very slow.
Yeah, orange micro. Well, the problem with that is it's doing emulation on top of emulation on top of emulation.
Yeah.
What you really need, and there is no real substitute for buying fast printers. Because you're at the speed of the printer, no matter how fast the program is, no matter how fast the machine is. You could get 120 megahertz Pentium with the fastest program on Earth and plug it into that printer. It's not going to print any faster.
I think you can step up to an 8100 Quadra and it's still going to
print that slow. Right. It's not the program, it's the printer.
Now, even an inkjet will probably do you a lot faster than what you've got now.
You might. What I would suggest you do is if you have a friend who's got even an old laser writer, an 8-page per minute printer, have him bring it over with the drivers, set it up and give it a try with your mate. Stylewriter is a real nice printer, but it's not terribly fast.
What about an ImageWriter?
ImageWriter is still going to be slow. It seems faster because you watch it work.
It's not.
But it's not actually fast.
Okay, good luck.
Thank you.
And fast printing, and thanks for being with us. I wish we had time for more calls and more comments from our listeners, but boy, time sure does fly when you're having fun. My thanks, as always, to all of you who called in with excellent questions. Of course, a special thanks to our panel of experts today, Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Paula Chapman, for being with us today and providing that expert advice. Rester Vale, our technical director, I'm Bob Smith. Thank you for being with us and inviting you to join us once again next week at the same time for another edition of Soundbite.
Broadcast of Soundbites is made possible in part by Century Group, manufacturers of UL-rated Century Fire Safe Media products, patented fire and dust protection for the special needs computer use test, and by Vivitron Corporation, serving Western New York since 1985, advising your computer needs.
The forecast for this afternoon, gradual clearing, but cool. Highs only in the mid-60s, tonight partly cloudy and chilly.
Cigarette lighter adapters, because they've got the radar detector, they've got the CB radio, they've got the cellular phone. So there you need three plugs into your cigarette lighter.
Oh, please. Let's take a call.
Yeah. Get good wiring, folks. Hi, you're on the air on Soundbites. Welcome.
Thank you. This is PJ from Penfield.
Hey, PJ.
Hi, PJ.
Hi. Recently I was able to graduate from my Hewlett-Packard 110, which the battery's died, so I was able to graduate to a compact Pentium 90.
Whoa. That's not graduation.
From kindergarten, I know, into the third year graduate school.
Yeah, no lie.
Yes.
And of course, my level of sophistication is in the second half of kindergarten still.
Yeah, right.
But be that as it may. Resident software specifically for the modem is the compact speed pack, as I found out when I called compact, since it didn't let me use the Kermit and SetHost programs to emulate a VT320 to log on to the system at work to the dial-up numbers. With the resident software, no problem, except it only does a VT100, which is kind of like getting a strand of spaghetti, greasy spaghetti with gloves on, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Kermit and SetHost get me as far as getting in there, and the modem comes back and says, okay. The people set me up so that I was able to bypass that one by disabling the error correction, and it worked yesterday, and it died subsequently, and I just keep getting okay after I go through the whole string that should allow me to connect.
Where do you work?
I work for the state. I work at Finger Lakes DDSO, okay. And it's the whole state system. So I'm dialing up in Monroe. I've tried there as well as directly to Beck.
What are you dialing up to? Is it a VAX?
Yes.
Cluster? And what software are you using?
The Kermit and SetHost are the programs.
SetHost?
Yeah, SetHost as well as Kermit. Both of them are not
Latvian. Those are from
Yeah.
And I know there's like Crosstalk or other things.
Yeah. The one that I have found, do you have of course you have Windows. You just bought a new P90. It comes with Windows. You don't get that choice.
With the pain.
Yeah, right, exactly. There are a couple of programs that will do what you want to do. If you want to stick in the DOS world, there's an old program called PacerLink. which would connect you and give you a fairly decent connection. If you want to move up from that, internet in a box from the at the DOS end does have some telnet stuff, but that depends on where you're dialing into as to what it'll take. What you may be finding is that the modems that you have at work are set to software flow control or X on, X off.
Mm-hmm.
All new modems tend to come with hardware flow control, and if one is running hardware and the other one's running software, you've got a problem.
Okay.
So you need to look into your modem command string to turn off hardware flow control and turn on software or X on, X off flow control. I have found that I work at RIT, and most of the people with new computers who are trying to dial into the old software flow control lines have exactly that problem. They connect, it says okay, nothing else happens.
Okay, so PacerLink or possibly just turning off from hardware to software.
Well, even it doesn't matter what you buy, because you're really going to need to make sure you turn off that software flow control. I'm sure the software you've got will work perfectly. The real question is the modems are not talking to each other correctly.
You want to talk with a system administrator on where you're calling in, and have them recommend software. Number one, they know how that it works, and number two, they know how to make it work.
Right. In fact, it's the Kermit.
Yeah, they gave
it. Also, they said
they set it up.
You're the only one that of the course hundreds.
Yeah, I think Nick's got the point though.
Yeah,
you're
I think
you're fighting with hardware.
Right.
That is exactly the problem
that
we've had at RIT.
As well as do it. So I'll check with the system administrator.
The other thing that I've run into is a lot of companies, though, older organizations still have the cheaper modems, and then you get these newer computers with the 28.8 internals, and they have trouble talking to some of these older systems that don't have the error correcting modems.
So Compaq also uses proprietary modems in their own systems. We've got some Presarios with proprietary modems in that may have a slight differences in command.
Right, so you definitely want to make sure that you're running software flow control.
Here is, by the way, thanks for checking in, good luck, but here is a plug, though not shameless at all, but a very worthwhile one. We're hearing from Richard at Gates Chilai High School. He says, I teach at Gates Chilai Local High School, and I'm interested in locating any usable IBM or compatibles in the 386 or better class. I know the taxpayers are interested in keeping their school taxes as low as possible, therefore, obtaining computers through donation is very cost-effective. Any ideas, any comments on how to go about it or what to do?
I tell you, for the longest time, I was soliciting donations to give to schools and individuals, but it seems that most people want 386s and above,
Windows
and what
machines.
I'm getting are 8088s.
Yeah,
because
so
people just bought the 386.
You may find if somebody's going to give you a 386, it's because they know you specifically and want to donate to Gates Chilai, as opposed to, here's my 386, give it to somebody worthwhile.
I believe,
I'd love to help you myself, but...
I believe in this last week's paper, one of the papers this last week, on the front page in one of the sections, was something about somebody that was doing that, getting PCs for local organizations.
Right. Yeah,
more and more.
And I know that I broadcast that to several organizations that I knew. I have not heard back in terms of their success or not, but what Nick is saying is true. People need Windows machines, and that's not necessarily
the case. I've had folks come up and say, do you have any used 486s? Yeah.
More and more common these days.
Yes,
are
I'm still using them.
Yeah, or when somebody upgrades their 386 or 486, they're going to get a new machine. They give the old machine down to the kids.
That's right.
And even now, kids in elementary school and even kindergarten are getting computers to work on their
desire. If it's been written for DOS, OS 2, or Windows, I'll probably be able to find it. This has been Paul Casarino, your prospector of the digital domain, for Soundbites, WXXI AM 1370 Rochester and WEOS 89.7 in Geneva.
And we thank Paul, of course, who will be back 4 weeks from today with another edition of Shareware Gems on Soundbites. And that puts the wrapper on Soundbites for this Saturday and Memorial Day weekend, May 27, 1995. Thanks very much, as always, to Nick Francesco and Dave Enright, and, of course, to Paul Casarino for Shareware Gems, for contributing so much to today's program, and thanks to all of you who called in with your questions as well. For Esther Vale, our technical director, I'm Bob Smith, wishing you a very happy holiday weekend and inviting you to join us once again next week at the same time when we come your way with another edition of Sound Bites.